Phantom Computers. This is Intelligent Performance.
Matthew, thank you so much for being here on the podcast. You have an unbelievable story, which I'm really excited to dive into. But before we do that, I'd love to hear, what's your take on intelligent performance?
Thanks for having me, Michael. You know, I haven't done a podcast before for someone on the other side of the world, but here's the first. Intelligent performance, I think, especially coming from a high-level sporting background, you can kind of go a lot of ways with it. Intelligent performance, you can look at it from a recovery point of view, you know, making sure that if you're playing a very top level sport, you know, you need to be intelligent around how you recover after matches and training to, you know, be able to perform at the next one. You also then need to look into parts of your game that you maybe need to improve on and being intelligent around that. You know, if a coach is telling you something, or you need to, maybe you can see yourself where you need to improve an area of. That's also, in my eyes, being quite intelligent around your performance as well. I guess I'll probably go along those lines.
I love that. That's great. And Matthew, you've just released a book called Second Chances, which is all about your kind of journey through life. And I reckon that would have certainly framed how you think about maybe not just performance, but just life in general. So perhaps in your own words, can you introduce us to what's the book about? Because it's quite an extraordinary story in terms of what you've been through.
Yeah, so it's named Second Chances because I personally feel like I've been given a second chance at life. I was a professional hockey player in Germany for 2 years, and I'm starting my third season with them. I was diagnosed with a brain tumor on the 13th of September, Friday the 13th, if you're superstitious. And it was the size of 3 golf balls in my midbrain, and I was told I was a day away from having a brain hemorrhage. And where the tumor was in my head, if I'd had that hemorrhage, I wouldn't be standing here today. Wow. And the week before, I was in Belgium, as I just signed for a different club, KHC Dragons in Belgium. And I was told they sent me back to Germany because I wasn't playing very well. And I was told if I was in Belgium, or if I was in Belfast, where I'm from, I wouldn't have had that emergency surgery. So I was in the right place at the right time, and I wouldn't be here to tell a story if I wasn't either of those two places. So,
well,
the book kind of documents my illness and my recovery to get back onto the hockey pitch, because when I was flown home back to Belfast by air ambulance, the consultant neurosurgeon I was under told my parents he didn't think I would ever walk or talk again, let alone be able to cut up my own food and feed myself, because I was in Germany, in hospital in Germany, for 6 weeks and I had 5 surgeries. And in the last week, I stopped walking, talking and eating. And then I was flown home by air ambulance to Belfast. And that's when my parents were told that. There was that awful news. And the physios, the occupational therapists, the speech and language therapists worked with me over the months and months. And I was in a wheelchair for 2 months, a rollator for 6 weeks, and a single crutch for 7 weeks. And after I finished my radiotherapy, my last week of my radiotherapy treatment, my parents said to me, "You're walking in and out as if everything's back to normal." And they took the single crutch off me, and that was the end of my walking aids. And then 1 year after my diagnosis, so the 13th of September 2020, I ran unaided on the pitch for the first time. I ran 2 lengths of the pitch and broke down into tears. Mm. And after that, my dad was there, and he said to me, "I didn't think I'd ever see you run again," which, from going from a professional international hockey player to being told, your parents are being told that you might never walk or talk again. Do they enroll? Obviously, it's a lot of emotions, but
yeah, wow. And forgive me, Matt, you don't look particularly old either. Like, I'm 35. How old are you?
I turned 30 in August there, so I was this so yeah, it was just wow. Just under 5 years ago, so I was 26 at the time.
Been an extraordinary journey. So let's just kind of dive into a bit more detail. So first of all, what does it take to become a professional hockey player? What was that kind of, it's not a very well-trodden path from what I understand, especially, you know, kind of in your neck of the woods and where I grew up in Pommeland, it's, you know, soccer's all the rage, right? Hockey, I certainly played at school, but it's not necessarily seen as an obvious pathway. When did you decide to kind of take that pro, and what was that journey like?
Whenever I was, so I studied a master's of mechanical engineering in Queen's University Belfast, and at that point I was playing in the Irish national team, and I had a couple of clubs in Europe had asked me to come over and play professionally for them. But my mum always said to me, "You're not going anywhere until you finish your degree." And I think they always say your mum's always right, because if I had went away, I wouldn't have come home, and then this all would have happened to me, and I wouldn't have had a degree to fall back on. I have a full-time job now, which is because of I have that degree to fall back, or I had that degree to fall back on. So I was playing in a European competition in the Netherlands, and a German club had come down to meet me. A couple of Irish guys had already went and played for them before, and they had been told about me, and they came down to meet me at that event and watch me play. And then I went over and joined them later that year in August, September time of 2017, and played
So what
two
is it?
seasons. Sorry, go
Sorry,
ahead.
what does it take to be a professional hockey player? Like, how is it? Is the standard? I would imagine it's very, very high in Europe. Is it in particular, or is Germany the best place? Or
Yeah, so Europe's definitely the best place for field hockey. Belgium, Holland, and Germany would be the three countries that would have the top leagues.
right.
And I am a defender, and the German league is very notoriously, it's notoriously hard and difficult as a defender. As I said, a couple of Irish guys before had played at the club and played at the league, and I spoke with them, and they said to me, like, if you're looking to progress your hockey, this is the league to do it in. So I did that and went over and played two and a tiny bit seasons before falling out.
Yeah. So the diagnosis piece, like, I can't imagine. It sounds like you got the news pretty quick. Or actually, how did they pick it up? What was it? What were the symptoms?
So in June of 2019, my grandfather sadly passed away, and at that time I was waking up with migraines and vomiting,
Right.
and my had booked a doctor's appointment for me to go get checked out, and I was away with the Irish men's hockey team at that point. But the symptoms had stopped, and I won my 100th cap at that tournament. And I rang my mum to say, "Look, the symptoms have stopped. You can cancel the doctor's appointment." And then it wasn't until a few months later, in I had two dizzy spells in Germany within a week where I fell over and collapsed because I was so dizzy. And the second one was on Thursday, the 12th of September. And I rang my manager, and her husband was a doctor, and he organized me an MRI scan for the next morning, which was Friday the 13th. And it
Oh.
showed the tumor the size of three golf balls in my midbrain. And they said they could tell from the scan the pressures in my head. I was very close to having that brain hemorrhage. I had to go into hospital and get the pressure released.
That sounds horrific. Tell me about what
I think
that
I'm quite lucky.
process was.
I don't remember my granda passing in June, and I don't remember 6 months after that from my surgeries. I had five surgeries in 6 weeks in Germany before being flown home, and my memory comes back when I start my cancer treatment in the Friends of the Cancer Centre in Belfast. So it's a bit of a blessing in disguise. I don't remember that, but I had to have a few people help me fill in the blanks for the book.
No kidding. So the how do you release pressure from your brain when you've got a tumor like
Yeah,
that?
I have a photo on my phone. I think it's actually in the book. Whenever I FaceTime my parents being in hospital, and there's a big massive drain sticking into my head. So it's just me lying back in the bed and this big drain sticking into my head, releasing the fluid, because in normal people's brains, the fluid drains down their spinal cord. Whereas mine wasn't doing that. So they put in the drain to release the pressure, and then the two programmable shunts in my head at the moment, I don't know if they're doing anything, but that's what they're there for now. So
And sorry, for those who are uneducated, what's a shunt in your head?
I have two programmable shunts in my head, which help drain the brain fluid away from my brain down my spinal cord. So they
Wow.
were initially when I was in Germany, because my brain wasn't doing that, and I couldn't leave hospital without, while having a full-on drain stuck into my head, and I wouldn't be allowed to leave. So they put those in to basically let me leave hospital and I don't even know. Apparently, one of them's blocked. One of them is working. I don't really know. And they said they'll stay in unless they're causing me pain because they'll do more damage trying to take them out rather than leaving them in.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Extraordinary. So you said six operations in 5 weeks. Is that right? And anything to do with that brain? Like, I had a family member, he was an uncle actually, who had, as I was growing up, he had some sort of tumor behind his eye, and it was really tricky to get at, right? So yours sounds like it was maybe in a not dissimilar spot, or how did they actually access the tumor itself?
So I had a 7-hour surgery in a seated position, so they accessed it from behind. And the surgeon is one of the best neurosurgeons in Germany, if not the world. He gets flown to Dubai in the United Arab Emirates to perform people's neurosurgeries. And he was a friend of someone in the hockey club I was playing at, and they asked him to perform the surgery. And he
Wow.
removed 90% of the tumor. And didn't want to touch the last 10 because it was too dangerous an area, where he might have paralyzed me or worse. But he said the tumor would could be rem the re the remnants of the tumor could be removed with radiotherapy, and they actually wanted me to have my radiotherapy in Germany, but my parents just wanted me to get back to Belfast for to start my cancer treatment, and I had radiotherapy in Belfast, but I wasn't well enough to fly on a commercial plane, and ended up getting an air ambulance home, from Germany back to Belfast.
So you got to fly private, which is one of the perks of a very serious illness. See, what strikes me, Matt, is you. Well, sorry, Matthew, you share it very nonchalantly, and I'm curious. You know, it's the recovery set perhaps sounds like, what was that? What was it actually like for you to go through that piece where your life's been turned upside down? You know, you can't remember any of the surgeries at this point. So then you at some point you start to realize, okay, maybe no career, maybe no walking, maybe no eating, maybe no not much going on. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I was lying, like I lay in that hospital bed, needing my wheelchair to go somewhere, or my occupational therapist would stick her head through the door saying, "Right, Matthew, let's go down the corridor in your wheelchair." And I hated getting out of bed. My cancer treatment, I was so tired from it. And then my occupational therapist was saying, "Oh, you're wheeling the wheelchair today, or you're pressing the button in the lift." And it's small things like that that I just didn't want to do at that point, like pressing the lift button. I mean, you don't think about it now, but back then I just didn't want to do anything. I was so tired. But they pushed me and got me back on my feet. And as I said, the OTs, the physios, the personal trainers in the hospital got me back up on my feet, got me back walking, and the speech and language therapist got me back talking. Actually, I didn't talk for 7 weeks, and my dad came into my hospital room one morning and pulled up the chair beside me, and he said, "I know you can speak, you know you can speak. Pull your finger out and start speaking." And my sister came down to very, I said a very like faint hello or a very faint hi. And then the next morning, the nurses came and asked me, as if they did every morning, "Morning, Matthew, how are you?" But I never replied. Whereas this time I said, "Oh, I'm good, thanks. How are you?" And they went outside my room and started crying, saying, "He's speaking again."
Oh. That's wild, man. Yeah. Did you ever think you weren't going to get through it, Matt?
No, honestly, no. I thought, now the days when I was lying in that bed, I thought, "I'm never going to play hockey again."
Yeah.
And it's the only thing I wanted to do, from going from playing full time professionally and internationally to lying in a hospital bed, as I called myself, I was a vegetable. And there's many days I didn't think I'd be on back on the pitch. But I think being an international and professional hockey player, or just being a professional sports person or playing at the highest level, you need to have a positive mental attitude, because you're going to get knockbacks in sport. And I was one of the last people that didn't get selected for the Rio 2016 Olympics for the hockey team. And that kind of embedded that positive attitude in me. And my parents have always been very positive, so that definitely helped me get through those tough points, those difficult times in the recovery, because there was a lot of them. But as I said, I got back on the pitch, and I've been playing now for the past 2 seasons. And I'm doing a lot more hockey coaching now because I feel like that's where I can add benefit to the sport again, because it's definitely not with playing.
Yeah. And in terms of that positive mental attitude, do you feel like it's always an interesting one, right? In terms of when you're faced with these really tough circumstances, it's interesting the resilience. It sounds like your sport career really developed. How do you think sport kind of helped you in that way?
I guess down to the positive mental attitude. That's where, it was embedded in me from sport, and it definitely, as I said, definitely helped me get through those tough times. Just thinking, as I said, you're going to get knockbacks in sport, like not getting selected for teams, and it's how you bounce back from that. So I guess this was just a knockback, but quite a big one. So yeah, just keeping that mindset positive to get through those tough times.
Wow. And even when you're kind of on your hospital bed, you're feeling so exhausted. So it sounds like that kind of the positive attitude kind of walked out the door for a period while you were dealing with just the sheer fatigue of the treatment. Is that right?
I was the chemo. I had a very heavy chemotherapy regime. I had 4 cycles of 2 weeks on, 1 week off, and I wasn't sick once during that, which my oncologist said I was one of the first people to go through that treatment without being sick, and he put it down to my fitness levels going into the treatment from being a professional international sportsman. Therapy for 7 weeks, where I was allowed to travel from home, thankfully, and it hit me like. It hit me for six. I threw up, I don't know how many times, and different things like that. But look, I'm here today, be able to tell my story, and thankfully the cancer has been removed and I'm healthy. So I guess I could complain, but I'm not going to.
So what are your biggest takeaways from this, really challenging time for you?
I think the biggest one that I've taken away is how important family, friends, and relationships are. Before falling ill, I probably took family and friends for granted, and sport, hockey was the number one thing in my life. Whereas now I would say relationships, family, and friends are the number one thing, and hockey is obviously it was my life, it was my whole life. Whereas now it's just a small part of my life. And as I said, those kind of they've swapped their places. So the support I had from family and friends throughout the time, I can never repay that kindness and love that I was shown to them all. I can try, but I'm not going to get anywhere near it. So but yeah, I would say definitely relationships are the biggest thing now.
So what did that commitment from their side actually look like? Like, what was it? It's 4 months, a long time to navigate treatment. Are they having to spend time with you, or what did it look like?
My parents flew home on Thursday, the 12th of September, from a holiday, and I rang them on the Friday morning to say, I'm having emergency brain surgery tomorrow. Can you get to, you need to get to Germany? And they came. I was told initially I'd be in Germany for 1 week and then allowed to go home, but it turned out to be 6 weeks, and my parents stayed with me 6 weeks. My dad flew home with me in the air ambulance. I wasn't allowed to drive for 2 years after, for obvious reasons. So my parents lifted and led me and brought me everywhere I needed to go. And as I said, they pushed me in my recovery. Like, they took the single crutch off me and said, you're walking in and out. And they pushed me to walk more and more each day. And they pushed me to run. You know what parents are like, that they pushed me in a positive way. And it definitely, I as I said, I can never say that. And it got me back to where I am today.
Do they come from a sporting background, Matt? Because that sounds like fairly uncompassionate. To some degree, you might hear that as uncompassionate, but there's obviously a lot of love behind all that.
Yeah, no, I think, like, it always came from the right place. My dad played hockey to Irish under 21s level, and my mum played club hockey. Hockey's a family sport within Ireland, and the club I play at, Banbridge, is a very family orientated club. But as I said, like, it came from it. It was always, they had, love in the back of their head whenever they were telling me those things and pushing me. And like those days, I didn't think I could do something, and I would say, look, I don't think I can do that today, but maybe in 2 weeks' time I could. And I ended up doing it a couple of weeks later. And
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Pull your finger out, Matt. I love that's maybe that's just cancer treatment 101, isn't it? All right. I think one thing which really stands out from this whole conversation is really is your mindset, actually, Matt, to navigate that. to navigate, and even the way you quickly span the was it sorry you didn't make the Rio team, is that right? Were you expecting to?
No, I was quite young in the squad, but I was playing very, very well. And the Olympics is 16 players for hockey, but all into other international tournaments are 18. So if it was 18, I more than likely would have went. But
Wow.
because it's 16 with numbers in the athletes' village, I was one of the last ones to get cut, which obviously was difficult to take. But and then I always had aspirations of going back, and I was in hospital when they play Ireland played the qualifiers for Tokyo in Canada, and I was lying in a bed, not walking or talking or eating, and my dad came and told me they didn't qualify, but I didn't make any kind of fuss or anything because I couldn't.
Yeah. Wow. So what's next for you, Matt, in terms of how do you look at the future at this point?
Well, I'm getting married this year, so that's
Awesome.
a massive thing. And I'm doing a lot more hockey coaching rather than playing at the moment because I feel like that's where I can add benefit to the younger people in the club and in the sport. And that's where I feel like I can add benefit to the sport because, I used to be a decent hockey player, whereas now I'm awful and I find playing very frustrating.
Right.
So definitely hockey coaching is going to be the next step. And yeah, getting married to Jean is a massive thing coming up.
That's awesome. The just out of interest, just to speak to the hockey side. So it sounds like you've the walk, talking, and eating has resumed, but it sounds like that high level of performance is it no longer achievable? Is that gone forever or?
That's gone. My eyesight was badly affected, and my fitness and mobility, just my balance was badly affected. And your
Right.
balance doesn't ever, your sprint speed, your change of direction, things like that. And it has come back to a certain extent, but it's not anywhere near the level it used to be at, and it's not going to ever go back to that. But it took a long time to kind of realize that I would never play that level again. And I
Yeah.
was lucky enough to win 105 caps for Ireland and play in a World Cup in India and win a European bronze medal. So I have a lot of lo lovely memories to look back on. But as I said, coaching pathway is definitely now the next aim, and let's see where we can get with that.
What was it like to reconcile that you might not play that again or never play at the level you wanted to? It was a big part of your life, right?
It took 2.5 years to get back onto a pitch for a match, and it was for the lowest team in my club, the fifth 11. And after that match, someone was there to interview me, and I always, I did interviews before, and I said I want to go to Paris. No, I want to go to Tokyo. I want to go to the
Yeah.
Olympics. And he said to me, "Do you think it's time to maybe reconsider your aspirations?" And I said, "Yeah." I think, look, I realize now that I'll never play at that level again, but I can always look back on those fond memories and see how lucky I was at one point in my life. So,
Yeah, wow. That's a tough pill to swallow, right? Especially when you pursued it to such a degree. And it would have been, yeah, I don't know what it takes to become a pro hockey player, but I would imagine there's a similar level of commitment to becoming a professional soccer player, as an example, where it just becomes your life. It's everything you do. Would that be right, man, or not?
like we were training every day and two matches at a weekend, and a lot of Germany's obviously a very big place, so there's a lot of travel.
Right.
But yeah, no, as I said, it was my whole life. So, but I loved every minute of it, and wouldn't I always wanted to go back, but then
Yeah.
realized that I but
It's life is an unfair beast, isn't it? It is
yeah.
tough to swallow sometimes. So tell us, you've now moved on into a career at PwC. You work in the financial crime space. Just tell us, I know you can't talk too much about the actual nuances of what you do, but just talk about what have you kind of what are some of the highlights, or what are the kind of the strengths you've taken from your professional sporting career and even treatment to which you find kind of apply well in what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think the positive mindset, obviously, you kind of need to have a positive mindset anywhere you go, or that's my belief anyway. But the coaching aspect is, I find, is there's a big tie over between business and sport. So in sport, you have a conversation with someone saying, "I feel like you can do this better. I feel like you can do this better," or it's a two-way street. They can feed back to you as well. But I feel like in business as well, there's a big coaching aspect that maybe is overlooked. I did a talk last week on it as well in work, about coaching, and there are a lot of tie overs between sport and business, in that aspect. So I think that's definitely something that I've taken away from my sport into my professional life.
So what do you think in terms of the coaching piece? What do you think's most relatable? Is it just is it challenging people, or is it the ability to
having that conversation? I think, Mike. And challenge, as you said, challenging people. Like, some people don't like to be challenged, but then sometimes it needs to be done, and it benefits the team then in the long run. Maybe it makes the person comfortable for 10 minutes, 30 minutes or a day, but they'll get over it, and then it benefits the team in the long run.
Got you. Okay. Well, yeah, it's a tricky space, isn't it? I think navigating feedback often, I work a lot in corporates in terms of training some of their teams, and it's always, we ran a session just recently, and there were two athletes. One was a professional boxer, one was a former Aussie rules player, and just the way they thought about feedback was extraordinary compared to the others. Like, the others really kind of avoided it, didn't like it, you know. The other two, like, they just loved it. Like, they were like, I think one of them described it almost like an addict. They loved, like, they craved feedback, because that was the mindset that they built. How do you find working in a corporate space? Because it can be very different in terms of the mentality. Often the people who are in the corporate world, but whether it's company or even the client you're engaging with, yeah, it can be a very different take on why they're at work.
I think it's this, as you say, like, some people create feedback and some people resent it. And
yeah,
I guess what is in his business. You know, you have some people that want your feedback and some people that don't. I think the way you word it can be a big thing. Obviously, you can say, you know, you're really bad at this, but that's obviously not going to go over well. But you can say to them, I think if you improve in this area, it'll benefit such and such. You know, I think it's the way you word things. It makes it a bit easier for people to hear.
Yeah, and set it right to that. Well, Matt, it's been a fascinating insight to an incredible journey. We're going to link to your book in the episode description. Is there any parting words you wanted to share with the listeners? I know you're very keen to get your message out. Is there anything you'd like to share at this point?
I think, you know, the idea behind the book always was, if you feel like something's not 100% right, go get checked out, because I don't know what would have happened if I'd went to that doctor's appointment that was booked a couple of months before I was diagnosed. You know, if they'd found the tumor earlier, or if I would have been as badly affected. So I think the takeaway from the book and the interviews and things that I've done is that if you do feel like something isn't 100% right, just go and get it checked out, because it might save your life.
That's a great place to leave intelligent performance. Intelligent performance is get checked out before it's a problem. So, Matt, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's congrats on an incredible recovery. And I think it's super exciting to see what you get up to next. And thank you.
Thanks very much for having me, Michael. And I hope the podcast keeps going strong.
Our pleasure.